All Are Punished: The History and Import of Romeo and Juliet by Brad Miner. I got in. Although the word plagiarism comes from the Latin plagiarius, meaning kidnapper. I've known writers who've referred to a book or a poem or a play they've written as their baby. And if somebody had pilfered their text, they'd have considered it tantamount to child abduction. The word, rendered as plagiary, didn't find its way into English until the beginning of the 17th century, specifically in 1601, when dramatist Ben Jonson, author of The Alchemist and Shakespeare's acquaintance and rival, first used it. It's rather like this exchange in Lewis Carroll. Alice. Well, I must say I've never heard it that way before. Caterpillar. I know, I have improved it. And it captures the attitude of writers in the 17th and earlier centuries. It wasn't so much that, say, William Shakespeare stole from Luigi de Porto, 1485 to 1529, or Matteo Bondello, circa 1480 to 1562, or Arthur Brooke, died in 1563, all of whom had written earlier versions of a tale of star-crossed lovers. It's that the Bard of Avon improved them all in his Romeo and Juliet. De Porto's was first in 1524. Historia Novellam Retrovata di Due Giovanni Amani, newly discovered story of two young lovers. In 1554, Matteo Bondello, as with De Porto, a name never mentioned in my college Shakespeare classes, wrote his own novella based on De Porto's. It's unclear if it was Bondello's work that Shakespeare principally drew upon. But thinking of Friar Lawrence in the Bard's version, note that Bondello was a Dominican friar and a bishop of Agen in France. Shakespeare was likely conversant in Italian, as Professor Kent Cartwright, excerpted in the Folger Shakespeare Library article, writes. Shakespeare apparently learned Italian. Then in the mid-1590s, and he read sources in Italian for plays such as The Merchant of Venice and Much Ado About Nothing. For Shakespeare and his countrymen, the idea of Italy, as scholar Michael Wyatt puts it, took on a life of its own. But Shakespeare also had access to English translations of Bishop Bondello made by William Painter, died in 1595, and more especially, the narrative poem, The Tragical History of Romeo and Juliet by Arthur Brooke, 1562. I never tire of reminding myself, and therefore of boring others with the fact that during this time, England was Catholic, Protestant, Catholic again, and finally Protestant in the space of a bit more than a quarter century. It was a period of destabilization and violence. But it was also an era of great creativity. And at the end of the chain begun by Luigi de Porto, we have Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, 1597. Hamlet usually tops a list of Shakespeare's greatest tragedies, which is fine. In college, I wrote an essay suggesting that the Prince of Denmark was a kind of existentialist Christ figure. I got an A, although that was for effort and not because the professor thought I'd prove the point. I wasn't a Roman Catholic then, or I might have. In March, my wife and I will see Denzel Washington in Othello on Broadway, with Jake Gyllenhaal as Iago, and one could argue that the great tale of jealousy deserves consideration as Shakespeare's best. The greatest writer in the English language was at his best writing tragedy. I'm not going to suggest that Romeo and Juliet ranks above the aforementioned plays, or King Lear, Macbeth, Julius Caesar, et alia. But I think the case may be made that Romeo and Juliet is Shakespeare's most influential play. This is because it's the most read, and often the first read Shakespeare play, by impressionable students. And it is the most taught, most performed play in American high schools by far. Scholar Jonathan Burton, writing on the Whittier College website, says, "No play is taught more frequently than Romeo and Juliet, which appears in roughly 93% of all ninth grade classes." I believe it. If to be or not to be is the most quoted line from Shakespeare. O Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? Can't be far behind, even if the 15-year-old girl who must recite it has trouble suppressing a giggle. Of course, she shouldn't laugh and won't if she grasps the import. Shakespeare was a recusant Catholic. Does anybody doubt this anymore? 13 of his plays have Italian settings, which allowed him to create Catholic characters and Catholic settings to express Catholic ideas and not be arrested for it. And he did so in that play set in Denmark, too, given that Hamlet Sr. is languishing in purgatory, a concept otherwise ripped from the English imagination by Article 22 of the 39 Articles of Religion of the Anglican Communion that condemned the Romish doctrine as vainly invented. In a superb article, Romeo and Juliet in a Nutshell, Joseph Pierce suggests that the play is misunderstood by most who read and teach it. Those for whom it's the story of a doomed, pure love. The actions of parents, kinsmen, and Friar Lawrence contribute to that impression. But the correct way of reading the play is what might be called the moral or cautionary approach, in which the tragedy is caused by the abandonment of reason in the face of erotic love or communal hatred. In fact, Shakespeare intended the play to be read as a cautionary tale about the consequences of unmitigated passion. Romeo, a seducer by reputation, has led Juliet astray. And, in his most salient observation, Pierce notes that the bitter failures of the Capulet and Montague parents serves as a moral counterpoint to the treacherous passions of youth. It is as though Shakespeare is illustrating that the young will go tragically astray if not restrained by the wisdom, virtue, and example of their elders. Now, that is a superb way for teachers to take students through the play, and it gives more emphasis to the prince's admonition, "All are punished." And it's true today when respect for the sacrament of marriage founders.